Welcome back to Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. When we wrap up, you get Fox Sports Radio for an hour or so, and then it's time for High School Hoops, our Cleveland Clinic cage matchup tonight. A little bit of a switcheroo. We thought that Tim Elkhorn was going to head on down to the territory claimed by Mayor Hans Schneider down in Wellington, but we decided to change things up a little bit. Warrensville Heights taking on Lorain tonight. Tim Elkhorn will have the call, and he's kind enough to join us in studio. How are you, my friend?
Always good to drop by on a Friday afternoon. Good to be here. Looking forward to tonight over at Lorain High. Yeah, we flexed the schedule once in a while. You know, you get late into the year, and if there's a real attractive matchup that you're thinking, boy, that game should be on the radio, we'll do that. And certainly this is a big LEL game tonight with Warrensville Heights and Lorain. So, yeah, we flexed it a little bit. Believe me, down the road, we'll have the Falcons, we'll have the Dukes, but we thought tonight this was one that our listeners should hear. So glad to be going to Lorain tonight.
Should be a really awesome matchup. You mentioned a great LEL matchup. Lake Erie League has some really good teams in it, no doubt about that. These are two of the finest, as a matter of fact, two of the top four in that league. And you know, you look at the way Lorain has played recently. They seem to have rebounded pretty well after that loss to Cleveland Heights. They've rebounded with a couple of victories, but this is going to be a really tough one against Warrensville Heights tonight.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to John Rossitano, and one of the things he told me was this is a team that he thinks is playing above his expectations. This is a young basketball team. Lorain was a club last year that started five seniors, so he had to replace his entire starting lineup. Boy, Devon Grant just having a sensational year, a number two in the county as far as scoring is concerned. Tavon Pierre-Lewis putting together an outstanding year. In fact, I was going through the Chronicle-Telegram and their basketball page today. I didn't realize Tavon Pierre-Lewis is in the top 10 in three separate categories. So he's having a great year. Lorain at 10-2, Warrensville Heights at 8-5, and Bull, as you said, that LEL, it's rugged. I mean, Lorain has sat atop that league for the past few years, but they get challenged in the LEL with the likes of Cleveland Heights, with the likes of Warrensville Heights, and Maple Heights, and Lutheran East now comes in this year. So it's good basketball in Lorain High. I think they're fortunate to be in that league. For us as fans, as media people, it's tough because they don't play a lot of Lorain County teams, but their strength of schedule, their quality of competition is absolutely terrific.
Want to touch on something that you just mentioned. You mentioned Coach Rossitano, maybe a little bit taken back by some of the success that they've had this year because this team is so young, and they did lose a great deal from last year as well. I remember going back to a Nick Abraham Saturday Sports wrap-up show that you and I did a while back where we were talking with Coach Rossitano after their victory over Maple Heights and reading the Chronicle-Telegram from the morning of. You know, Joel Hammond had mentioned somewhere in the article that he wrote about that game where Lorain wasn't necessarily ready to be written off just yet when they took down Maple Heights. Again, one of those top four teams in the Lake Erie League. And, I mean, as you've watched them so far this year, comparing to what you saw from them last year, are you taken back by what you've seen so far?
I am a little bit because, as we said, they had to replace five starters and Lorain County's Mr. Basketball and Naz Bohannon. I mean, he was that dominant a player. So you thought they would have to retool this thing a little bit. I'm really surprised by Devon Grant. To watch him last year coming off the bench, he was a nice role player. Now, he was only a sophomore last year, but his game has really blossomed. He's taken a big step forward. So, yeah, I am taken aback. But that being said, winning breeds winning. And these kids that are now juniors, they have been around winning for a while, and they know how John runs the program, and they know what the expectations are, and they will find ways to win because they've watched guys like Naz Bohannon and Devon Andrews and those type of players. So they kind of understand this is what it takes to win, and even though they may not be there yet experience-wise, they have that mentality where Lorain High Titans, when we take the floor, we're going to win the basketball game. We're going to figure out a way to win it. And hence, they're 10-2 going into tonight.
Well, and tonight, they take on Warrensville Heights. Warrensville Heights, the mayor is Brad Sellers.
I know.
Yeah, who we had on a countdown at the Q. Actually, I think it was a countdown at the Brew show last year. Yeah. Not sure if he's offering any expert advice or not to Warrensville Heights, but what does Warrensville Heights bring to the table?
A great backcourt. They have a tremendous backcourt. They average 69 points a game, so this is a team that's going to want to get up and down the floor like Lorain. So I think my play-by-play tongue is going to get tested tonight because I think we're going up and down over at that Titan gym. But
this is a warm-up for you here.
But, yeah, they've got a backcourt that is just outstanding. In fact, a freshman at point guard, Ramel Arnold. And John Rossitano was telling me Ramel Arnold is one of the most highly touted freshmen in the state. They always take a look at each class, each grade, and they love this kid. They think he could really be a big-time basketball player by the time his career is over at Warrensville Heights. So each team has a great backcourt. I mentioned Devon Grant for Lorain High. Warrensville's got this backcourt. They want to push tempo. They want to pressure the basketball. Probably two teams that mirror each other somewhat. So I think that's going to be the key area tonight that Steve Bailey and I will really be keeping an eye on, that backcourt matchup between Lorain and Warrensville.
How many times have you encountered a game like this where you look at things on paper and you think to yourself, man, they're going to get up and down pretty quickly. We'll probably have a game where both teams score in the 60s, maybe the 70s, and then they both score somewhere in the area of the high 30s, low 40s, or maybe even less than that.
You know, really, it doesn't happen that often because, especially at this point of the year, when you're at, you know, into the teens as far as 13, 14, 15 games played, both teams know how they want to play. And it's not like one team is trying to shut down the other team's style. I mean, Warrensville, hey, if Lorain wants to run, we'll run with them. And I'm sure Lorain's going, they want to run, we'll get up and down the floor. So it's not that real chess match where one coach wants to play in the 30s and the 40s and the other coach wants to play in the 60s and the 70s. I think in a situation like this, both teams want to play that up-tempo style. So there'll be some strategy, and there'll certainly be some tactics going on out there. But for the most part, this is the style these kids want to play. It's the style their coaches want them to play. And it really is the style of the LEL. I mean, you look at games in the LEL, you know, you mentioned the Chronicle on a Saturday morning. Go through those LEL scores. More often than not, they're in the 60s. They're in the 70s. It's just that style of play that's within that conference. They'll get up and down. So I think we're going to see it tonight.
We're about a month away now from tournament time. That's always exciting because this is about the time of the year where teams certainly have their eye on seeding and obviously potential matchups you won't know for quite some time, though. But as you look at this thing now, with about 3 weeks to a month left, you see any teams that really kind of stand out above all the others? Looking at the top five in the Chronicle Telegram week after week, you see a lot of the same names up there.
Absolutely.
You see Vermilion up there. You see Lorain up there. You see Elyria up there. Wellington always seems to be up there. Clearview always seems to be up there as well. Anybody outside that top five that you think might be able to crack that and maybe get a top one or two seed?
Kind of a dark horse, per
se?
Yeah,
a little bit of a dark horse. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Division One over at Elyria Catholic, now I know the Chronicle, as we do, primarily focuses on Lorain County. Look out for Old Falls. I mean, they sit next town over out of Lorain County, but that Olmsted Falls basketball team is a heck of a club. They've got a great coach in Chris Delisio. It's interesting you talk about the tournament draws because John Rossitano talks about that in our pregame interview tonight. He's already looking ahead and thinking about possible tournament matchups, not that he's not focused on the next, you know, 8-9 games. But I think Olmsted Falls could present a challenge. There really isn't that dominant team this year. There's a lot of teams that are kind of muddled right now in that 6, 7, 8, 9 win category. As far as the big schools are concerned, as you mentioned, the Elyria has struggled. Oh, boy, they've got a tough one tonight with Solon. Falls, as I said, I would venture to say right now it would probably be Falls and Lorain as your 1-2. I'm trying to think who else is over there. It's pretty much the Southwestern Conference. Avon, I think, could catch steam. People forget this is a club that last year was in the districts. I mean, they played good basketball. I think they were so far behind out of the gates this year because they got a lot of football players on that basketball team, and they jumped right into games. Even though they moved a couple of their, you know, first couple of games back just to try to give those football kids a chance to practice, we had Kevin Sapar on the Nick Abraham wrap-up, and he talked about that. They've kind of been playing from behind the eight ball all year long, trying to get these football kids into that basketball mode. Well, now you're getting to late January. I mean, if they're not in basketball mode by now, when will they be? And they've put together a nice little string here. So Avon would be a team to keep an eye on. Avon Lake is still young, start four sophomores. Westlake has been up and down. You saw them over at Midview, but Falls and Lorain, I would think right now would be the top two, and then everybody else kind of falls underneath those two. But there's still a lot of basketball to be played. Interesting about the tournaments this year, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but for the first time ever in the Northeast District, teams do not put themselves on a line. Everything is predetermined this year in the Northeast District. It'll be like the NCAA. So all that's going to happen is the coaches will vote, the teams will get seated, and then the Northeast District Board will slot you, just like they do in the NCAA. For all the years that I've been covering basketball and fans have been watching it here, teams got to put themselves on a line. You got to put yourself in a bracket. That's no longer the case this year. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, we'll find out here in about a month or so.
Right.
Actually, more like 3 weeks when they actually announce the seeds. So that should be interesting. Want to transition now into some Hall of Fame talk. Of course, Major League Baseball has four new Hall of Famers going into Cooperstown. You know, Jim Thome, obviously, in this area, a lot of notoriety. Vladimir Guerrero, a guy that you and I both had a chance to watch. He was a lot of fun to watch. Many describe him as one of the absolute best bad ball hitters of all time. Chipper Jones, one of the absolute greatest of that era. But there's one more name on that list that I wanted to mention because you've encountered this gentleman before in Trevor Hoffman. So for those that have not heard this story, and you can clean this up however you see fit, but you saw Trevor Hoffman, and he actually requested to hear you speak in Las Vegas a couple years back.
Yeah, I'll try to shorten the story and, as you said, clean it up a little bit. But a year ago November, Diane and I made our first ever trip to Las Vegas. And we were standing in one of the parking lots of one of the big hotels. I couldn't even tell you which one it was. We were waiting for an Uber. We were going from one casino to the next. And this white Expedition, I believe it was an Expedition, pulls up, and five guys come tumbling out of this Expedition, and they obviously had been having a very good time on the golf course, and had probably had a couple of beverages, and this one gentleman comes walking up to me, for what reason, I don't know, Diane and I were just standing there, and he says, do you know who this guy is, and he's pointing at this other gentleman in this group. I said, no, not really. Because I didn't recognize him in that setting. He goes, that's Trevor Hoffman. You know that name? Well, of course I knew that name. So I go, absolutely. I goes, one of the best relief pitchers in the history of Major League Baseball. And this guy got all excited. Yes! Yes! And he deserves to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I'm like, yeah, he does. And so the guy goes, well, how do you know Trevor Hoffman? I go, well, I'm a big baseball fan and da-da-da. I go, and I actually work at a radio station outside of Cleveland. We carry the Indians. So this guy goes, are you on the radio? And I go, yes, I am. You know? So now he calls Hoffman over. He calls Trevor Hoffman over. He's like, just talk for him. Talk for him. Talk for him in your radio voice, right? So now all these guys are gathering around me. Diane's just about dying. Like, you've got to be kidding me. So I'm just talking as I talk. So they're like, say something announcer-wise. Say something announcer-wise. So they're all just standing there, and I think, well, I'm in Las Vegas. I'm gonna give him my Michael Buffer impersonation, right? So they're all just standing there. I go, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the main event. All five of these guys get down on their hands and knees, and they do the Wayne's World. We're not worthy. In the parking lot of this casino in Vegas. It was.
Wow.
It was one of the more unique experiences of my life. And they're like, do you talk like that all the time? I'm like, no, I don't talk like Michael Buffer all the time. So that's my Trevor Hoffman story. But it happened in the parking lot of a casino in Vegas.
You know, some say.
All five of these guys on their hands and knees.
Like Wayne and Garth bowing to Alice Cooper and Aerosmith. Wow. See, some people go out to Vegas for the gambling. Some go out to see shows and. Some just go out there to see Tim Elkhorn, right, and just hear him do the announcer voice.
It was an accidental encounter, but it was one I'll never forget. I'm sure it's one Trevor Hoffman may not remember. Well,
what
stated.
A great guy. Him and his pals, they were really cool. I mean, but again, they had been having a good time on the golf course. But, yeah, that's a true story. True story.
Wow. One more thing before we let you go. Speaking of remembering, and Steve Bailey and I spoke about this yesterday. I mean, Jim Tomey was a lot of fun to watch, a lot of fun for a lot of the guys that we talked to. They say to cover just a genuine down-to-earth guy.
Awesome guy.
Now, here's the crazy thing about Jim Tomey. And I think in all the years he played for the Tribe, we were kind of spoiled because day in, day out, he did a lot of great things. But I tried to think back to that one particular signature moment, defining moment in Jim Tomey's career. I couldn't really narrow it down. I mean, we thought of maybe a few that could possibly stand out. You know, he caught the final out in foul territory playing third base that clinched the division for the Tribe in 1995. You know, there's that colossal bomb he hit that landed across the street. And, you know, I'm trying to think. I mean, there are maybe a few others, but, you know, you think about the Indians teams of the 90s, and there are always those moments that stand out. You know, defeating Randy Johnson to go on to the World Series. And then, you know, in that game, Kenny Lofton scoring from second on a pass ball. Albert Bell with that walk-off grand slam off of Lee Smith. You know, Manny Ramirez with that walk-off home run into the bleachers and left in extra innings off of Dennis Eckersley.
But Eckersley going, wow,
yeah.
As he walks off the mound. That's just one of the great, the camera picked him up going, wow.
Yeah. But like when you think about Tomey, like I can't think of any moment like that with Tomey.
You're right. It was just sustained excellence. And as you said, he did it in such a classy way. I mean, in every way, shape, or form, he was 100% class. But you're right, there really isn't that signature home run, that signature play where you go, man, that just personified Jim Tomey's career in Cleveland. I can't really think of one. There's one that stands out for me a little bit, but it actually was in New York, and they lost the game. But you remember when they were playing the Yankees in the rain, and Tomey hit a bomb to get them back in a ball game, which they still ended up losing. But I remember they were down like 6-1, and it was raining like heck in the Bronx. And I think he hit a 3-run shot to make it 6-4, and you felt like they might get back in it. You remember what game I'm talking about?
That was wow. Was that in 97 when they came from behind to win in that 5-game series?
No, they lost the series. I think they lost it that night in a kind of a real rainy, nasty night in the Bronx. But anyway, you're right. You don't really have that one, you and I were talking before we got started here, like that Giambi moment. You know, Giambi's home run to win that game will forever be his moment here in Cleveland. I don't really have that with Jim Tomey, but man, he did provide some incredible, incredible baseball. He really did.
More like a bunch of small moments throughout his career, right? That maybe we kind of took for granted.
That could be. You know, and sometimes you take greatness for granted.
Sure.
Unfortunately. Because it's now when you look back and you go, that's a Hall of Fame career. I mean, that guy was just great literally every single day. I mean, he did something every single day to impact a baseball game. That's amazing. What an amazing career.
No question about that. The numbers are there clearly to support that he absolutely positively should be in on the first ballot, and I'm certainly glad that came too. A pleasure as always, my friend. Best
always
of luck
good.
With the call tonight. We'll be tuned in for sure.
We'll be on the air. Well, you get to work with Steve Bailey, and then I do tonight.
That's right. When I'm done with him, I'm going to throw him out your direction.
I'm looking forward to him joining me on the call and looking forward to a great game tonight. Again, that's a big matchup in the LEL, so look forward to bringing it to the folks.
Good stuff. I know Steve's excited also, so it should be a good time. All right, we need to get a break in. We'll do that right now. We'll come back with the final half hour of this show. It's Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL.